episode 163, Getting Ready for the Holidays with Rebecca Saltzman of Balagan Be Gone. Welcome to How to Glow, where we get real about building the marriage of your dreams. I'm certified coach Kayla Levin, and I help married Jewish women go from surviving and overwhelmed to thriving and connected through practical tips, real life inspiration, and more than a little self-awareness along the way. All right. I am so excited to have you here joining me on the podcast. We've got a lot of ladies who are going to get ready for the holidays. And if they're anything like me, they've got their head in the sand and they're hoping that someone just sweeps in at the last minute and offers to clean and cook and do everything for us. So
well, I can't do that.
You're not.
I can help you. I wish.
I'm bringing Rebecca on this week to talk. She's a professional organizer and much more. I think that's you'll give us more of an idea of the work that you do. So just so everybody knows, we're going to start by talking about really just, I'm just going to pick her brain. That's the truth. She's giving me a free coaching session. She thinks it's a podcast interview about how to get ready for the holidays with a smile. And we're talking about Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, but I'm sure that the skills you're going to share are going to be relevant, even if someone's listening to this at any point in the Jewish calendar, right? Exactly. And then afterwards, she's actually just published a book. It is super exciting and there's much more. And she also has a membership program. So I'm going to give her an opportunity to share a little bit more about that as well at the end of this episode. And we have a giveaway. So you're going to have to listen to hear that too, but it's super awesome. Okay. So Rebecca, handing it over to you.
Okay. I'm ready.
We've got all the ages and phases here on the How to Glow podcast. For me, I'm a mom. I've got 5 kids, thank God, with my youngest is 3 months old today. We're going to be here. We're Bali Tshuva. We don't have parents that we go. Actually, that's not true. My in-laws became from, which is very, very cool. So we will probably go to them for some meals, but we're not traveling. They live nearby. And we have people listening probably who haven't made Yontif yet and still aren't making Yontif, or maybe are making it for the first time. And we have people who are hosting children and grandchildren. No pressure, okay. But can you give us something that could work for all of us?
Something for everybody. Okay. So I will just say this about myself is that I grew up religious and we went to my parents all the time or my in-laws all the time. And I didn't really make a Yom Tov for real until we made Aliyah. So we had already been married for like, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 years. I didn't have anything. And I basically had to start from scratch. But the thing is that what I found is no matter what position you're in, if you are just starting out, if you've been married for a while, if you are making your Yom Tov, or if you're going away, it doesn't really matter. The key to staying on top of things is lists. List building is super important, and a good list you'll be able to use from year to year. What I mean by that is when you can create menus, when you can create shopping lists, when you can create sort of situations on how to cook. So what I mean by that is the order of operations for cooking. So for example, what do you cook first? What do you cook second? What can you prep while the first thing is cooking, kind of thing? Like when you can sit down and plan that out, everything's going to go a lot more smoothly. The same thing is true, even if you're not making Yom Tov, you still need to get yourself to the airport or get your car ready, whatever it is. The key is going to be a checklist. What do you do to get to where you need to get to, not feeling like, you know, you just got run over by a truck? Because that's not a good feeling, you know, to go into any Yom Tov. You know, you want to be sitting at the table and feel like rested and calm and relaxed. And I find the best way to do that is to make a list. Now, the best thing about making lists for packing, let's say, is that you can reuse and adapt them for every single trip you always are going to take for forever and ever. So I advise my clients, I'm like, let's just make one spreadsheet. And every time you have a new trip, you copy the first trip onto a new tab and voila, you know, all you do is make edits for the season or for who's coming, or, you know, in case it's a little bit longer or a little bit shorter. But it's much easier to build off an existing list than to start from scratch every time. Mm-hmm. And that is true in life in general. Anytime you can make a template for yourself, things going forward in the future are going to be easier. So if you are making Yom Tov, sit down this time, make a list of all the things you want to cook, gather all the recipes in one place, make your shopping list. Then next year, you don't have to do that. All you have to do is execute the plan.
I want to talk about two things that I love about this that you're saying. So number one, we've talked before on the podcast about planning versus execution and this idea of like when you go to the grocery store and you don't actually know what you're making for the week and you're like trying to make the decisions as you're executing by doing the shopping and you come home so exhausted because they're two different like modes of thought, right? So when you're sitting down making your list, what you're really forcing yourself to do is have that planning separate from the execution. So you're really like allowing both of them. And I think I'm glad you're pointing this out because in our prep for Yontif, sometimes we're in such a rush or we're so already nervous about time that we don't feel like we have the time to sit down and do that. But really it ends up saving us time. Right.
But the real reason why I think it ends up saving us time is not because it saves us time because, you know, you're separating the task, that too. But the real reason I think it saves us time is because it cuts back on our decision fatigue. So when you go to the grocery store and you don't know what you want to make and you have to, you know, summon your imagination, that's really hard. That's double the decisions than you would normally have to make if you were just following a shopping list, because now you have to be creative and you have to execute the list. Mm-hmm. But when you pre-plan, you cut back on the decisions you need to make in a shorter period of time. You know, we only get a certain number of decisions that we can make every day.
Right.
Like there's a physical limit to how much we can actually decide every day before our brain is worn out. So when you can separate the tasks, it's easier for your brain to make those decisions for you and you extend your brain power, if you will, which is
that's really
huge.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And I think on the other hand, I mean, it's kind of interesting because we're talking about decisions, but that one of the things that I think is a resistance to sitting down as well is a resistance to sitting down and doing the list is that you have to make the decisions, right? You can't keep fantasizing that you'll make every single dish you saw in Mishpacha magazine or that you, you know, will like magically get this more time, but you really have to sit and look at, okay, we need to actually create the meal, or we need to make a decision about whether we're having people or not, or things like that.
Right. But it's a one-time menu. Because you're going to get to use this menu every single year for the rest of your life for as long as you want. Mm-hmm. The thing is I get wanting to make a different menu every Shabbos. I get that. But for Yom Tov, part of the beauty is the repetition from year to year. Because part of the beauty is you come to grow to expect these certain foods. I'll give you an example. When I was growing up, on Rosh Hashanah, my mom always made Cornish hens and stewed up this stew. It was kind of like simis, but not exactly simis, with broad egg noodles. Now, I love the Cornish hens. And I remember every year we would all fight about how much rice there was and that my mom never had enough stuffing rice to go, you know, with it. And that was everybody's favorite part. And the stew, which I hated, but I still, to this day, whenever I conjure the image of Rosh Hashanah, that's what I think of, my mom's Cornish hens and the stew. Those things are symbolic for us and our families come to love and enjoy them. And it builds expectation or it builds excitement, really not expectation. It builds excitement for the foods of those holidays, but it also takes something off of our plate because we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. Mm-hmm. So our families, even though you think that they might not be, our families are actually excited for these comfort foods of the Chagim. And it's okay because that's going to make them so happy. It's going to make them, I think, in my opinion, it enhances the spiritualness of the Chag when you're expecting this food and it's delicious and you love it. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. Like, you made me so excited. It's like really true. It's like, this is our version of the pumpkin spice latte. Right? Like, what would happen if one year Starbucks is like, we're going to go a different direction. It's just going to be cinnamon chai. Like, no, everyone would be really upset, at least in America. We don't have that problem here anymore. Right. But it's, you know, like it creates that nostalgia and that anticipation and, you know, for sure. And I feel like you're almost turning it on its head. Like, to me, I would think, well, Yent, if it's so important, like it's so special, let's make sure that's where we really like show off as a cook. But you're saying, you know, have your fun and creativity on Shabbos every week when it's your normal week. But Yent, if we already have a lot on our plates and we want to have the koach to daven and we want to have, you know, like our schedules are more wonky than normal, this is a better time for us to like, it's not necessary. Well, in a way it's less pressure because you know that these recipes work. You've made them
before.
It's
not that they're not special.
Right.
They can be special. It's just that you're not reinventing the menu.
Yes.
And that's the difference. Like there are special things that you only make for Yom Tov and that's what makes them special. You see, it's Cornish hens and stew on Rosh Hashanah. It's, stuffed cabbage on Sukkot. It's whatever, a certain kugel on Pesach. Yeah. Like it's those things. And historically we have those foods. We only eat hamantaschen on Purim. We only have matzah on Pesach. You know, you could make those things all year round, but then it minimizes the specialness at that time of the year.
100%.
So it's about reframing it a little bit. It's not that repeating is less, it's actually more. It builds anticipation. Like, don't you get excited for hamantaschen?
Yeah, totally.
I do.
Right.
I love them.
Yeah.
You know, and you can be creative within that. You know, you don't have to, you can integrate new recipes yearly, but when the bases stay the same, you know, and definitely there are going to be some years where you might not be able to get something. So you'll have to shift and pivot. But when you have the bones already set up, it makes needing to shift and pivot easier.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk about now if someone's, let's say they're not the ones making Yontif, they're going away. So I love like the packing list makes a lot of sense. It's very similar things every time. You know, I said to you before,
don't
we started, I'm not organized like you are. So my thing is always, once I go on a trip, I'm relieved when I figure out the thing that I forgot. Cause I always forget just one thing. So once I know what it is, then I can stop worrying about what it's going to be. Maybe I should be using your list, right? Then I could be checking them off. But yes,
well,
thank you.
Oh yeah. Definitely don't forget a gift because that's rude. But here's the thing. Even if you forget something, wherever you're going, you can probably go to the store and buy it.
Right.
Like if you forgot to bring over-the-counter medication, you can go to the drugstore and get it. Or maybe whoever you're staying at has it or a neighbor has it. Like there are ways to find what you need. So even if you do forget something, don't beat yourself up about it because whatever it is, it's not, it's something you can, you know, I was helping my neighbor pack today, actually, she's going away and she just had a baby and she was very, very worried, which happens to a lot of people. They get a lot of anxious when they're traveling. And I said to her, I'm like, I'm sure your mother-in-law will be thrilled to buy you whatever you need for the baby once you get there, like in case you forgot something, or even if you didn't forget something, like it's okay. Even if you forgot something, there's the washing machine. You can always, you know, wash whatever you need and you can double up the clothes if she's not warm enough. Like we're not talking about needing a winter coat, you know, and being prepared with only a tank top kind of situation. Like it's still in the middle of the seasons. If it's a little bit chilly, you'd use an extra blanket and you know, triple layer her and she'll be okay. Like, and I know that that's scary for a lot of new moms. So that's sort of a different category, but in general, wherever you're going, there's always going to be somebody in the community who can lend you a hand or you can borrow something from. And there's local stores wherever you're going that you can always get what you need. And so when you can reduce that panic and the anxiety, it's a lot easier to make sure that your trip is, you know, smooth because there's less to worry about. Like when you can remind yourself, like, it's going to be okay. I always say to myself, like, Hashem's taking care of it. Even if I forget something, it won't matter. Like it's going to be okay. And like, when I can take that off of myself, cause I'm actually a really anxious person. When I can actually take that off, like take off the responsibility on myself and like cede control to God, it's so much easier to manage my life in general, but definitely when these small things come up where it's like, there's nothing I can do.
Right. And so I think it's such a good point. By trying to be perfect, we're kind of trying to play God.
Right.
Right.
We're not trying to be perfect.
Right. And so I love that with, you know, with your neighbor, what you did is you stopped and like, you didn't just see that she was stressed out. You were like, you figured out why she was stressed. Right. And I think that for a lot of us, you know, if anyone is feeling, maybe a lot of people listening to this are not feeling so stressed, but if you are feeling stressed, just to stop for a second and say, what is the actual thing I'm worried about? Is it not having enough time? Is it the flight? Is it, you know, like that you won't find anything that you want to dress your kids in or yourself in or whatever, like actually identify what that thing is, because then you can move forward with it instead of just right. kind of accepting that you have to be stressed out because you're going into Yantif.
Right. I think also it's important, like it's the identifying, but also finding something where you can let go of the need to be in control. Mm-hmm. Because it's yes, there is an aspect of organization that is a certain level of control, but the beauty, the real beauty, in my opinion, of being organized is that it allows for flexibility when situations get out of control. So for example, if you know that you are extra prepared in a situation for the airplane, let's say, if something does happen, you can reassure yourself because you're like, well, I was prepared for this and I can flex and I can pivot. So like with my friend, we were talking about, you know, clothing. I said to her, pack, in addition to whatever you put in the suitcase that's being checked, pack 2 outfits for the baby and 1 for you and your husband. This way, in case, you know, she throws up or poops on you or something like that, you'll be able to have a change of clothes and you won't panic, but you know, you're prepared if the situation turns south. Mm-hmm. And that's really the key, or you get stuck somewhere or something like that. That's the key, is it's about planning enough so that you can be calm when you need to flex and pivot. Mm-hmm. Because that happens all the time, because we make a plan and God's like, that's not the plan.
Right.
And there's nothing you can do, but when you have already gone through like possible scenarios, you are able to be like, okay, that wasn't the plan. I don't know what the plan is, but I know that I'm prepared for a lot of circumstances. So I feel comfortable and I can rely on Hashem in these situations and know that everything is going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is a really important message because we have a lot of perfectionists in our, in our community, right? Yeah. And I'm saying the How to Glow community, but you could also say maybe inside the From community. And it's so easy as a perfectionist to immediately turn it on yourself, right? Something goes wrong. It's like, oh, what's wrong with me? I can't, you know, I always mess up or whatever. Like I should have done it differently. And I think like part of remembering that you're not God is that you know, like I say to my kids all the time, I'm like, Hashem knows how to make malachim. If he wanted you to be perfect, it's not like he made a mistake. Like there was an issue, like some secretary upstairs, like sent you as a person, but you were really supposed to be a malach. Like you were meant to be a person, which means like, why are you so special that you get to be the one that isn't supposed to make mistakes? We're all supposed to make right. mistakes. Right. So I think that this is just a great reminder for everybody going into it, that if, you know, things probably won't go exactly as you're planning. Right. And it's not about you and how good you are. It's just, that is the reality of being a human being.
And you're not bad if something goes wrong.
Right.
Yes. That's also really important. You are not a bad person. You are fine. The key to these kinds of situations is learning from them. Mm-hmm. And when you can learn from them, what I have always found is I keep getting in situations that I'm not learning like the message from. If you see that you're in a situation where like the same thing keeps happening and it's so frustrating, whoa, dial it back for a minute, because it's like, okay, what, then you can look at it objective, or you have to look at it objectively mm-hmm. and say like, okay, this keeps happening. Where am I going wrong? What can I do to avoid this happening again? Because that is, to me, in my mind, something that is, you know, Amida, we need to work on and correct and fix, but also just in general, like the point of these scenarios is for us to learn from them and not keep repeating them, or to spread our wisdom and, you know, help other people with them. And so whenever you're in a situation where it's negative, like when I sit in traffic, I'm like, oh, I'm sitting in traffic. And then I remind myself, I'm like, you know what? This is where I'm supposed to be right this minute. Mm-hmm. Whatever I'm it's setting me up for the next place I'm supposed to be, because I'm not supposed to be there until I arrive there, right? Like, when you can reframe that negative in your mind, first of all, the anxiety lessens like significantly, quickly. And not only that, but it's a lot easier to cope with whatever situation you happen to be in at the moment. And I'm not saying that this doesn't take skill to, you know, do, because it does. It took me a long time and a lot of practice to be able to say that to myself. And I still have to say it to myself, you know, like, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be, like, whatever happens.
But it's so, I'm so glad you're saying that, because, you know, it's not just a personality type. It's not like some people are able to accept it and some people aren't. It is a skill, and you develop it and you work on it over time. One of the things that helped me the most, and this is like the work that we you know, do inside of How to Glow and in the coaching that I do, which is always to watch the thought and see what it ends up like having you do. And so one thing that you mentioned, which is, you know, it's so important to learn, like the most important thing is to learn from it so that next time you can do something differently. And what happens when we beat ourselves up is we're turned off from learning. Like, our ability to learn, it gets derailed because we're so busy feeling inadequate or like something's wrong with us that we actually then don't get the growth that we could have. So for people who, like, maybe it's not enough to say, oh, you shouldn't beat yourself up, you should be nice to yourself. It's like, that doesn't land for everyone. It doesn't actually, it's not quite enough. But if they
but it's see not a solution,
that, like, it doesn't solve anything. It actually, I'm going to end up spinning in self-hate instead of growing and learning how to do something better.
What do I do instead?
Let me just try something else. Like, let's just try something else. Yes, exactly. Okay. So you're solving that. We've talked about the menu, which is amazing. We've talked about packing and also like dealing with anxieties. I've got two more things that I think might be coming up for people that I want to address. Number one, trying to decide which one to go first. It doesn't really matter. Women who feel like they're barely making it through the week as it is. A regular week is already too much. So how in the world, I mean, again, you're not Mary Poppins for us. You're not going to swoop in and take care of everything so we can go cook. But, you know, what would you say to someone who feels like, how am I supposed to also get ready to go travel, or also this or also that, or maybe I have more work because I'm going to be taking days off or whatever. You know, there's definitely people who are feeling that way right now. So what would you say to them?
First of all, that's a great, great question. First of all, if you're making Yom Tov yourself, then you can cook on Yom Tov. You don't have to have everything this year, especially. You don't have to have everything prepared beforehand. Okay. You just need to have everything purchased. And even if you forget something, I bet your neighbor has some extra. So don't worry about that. But like, you don't have to worry about getting it all done before. The things that need to be done before are the things you can't do on Yom Tov. So if there's something you want to use the food processor for, let's say, or if you don't want to leave a burner on your stovetop, let's say, but you're willing to leave the oven on, you know, you can work within those realms, figure out what needs the food processor, what needs the stovetop, make those things, and, you know, just cook everything in the oven. Additionally, you can prep and freeze. So I always tell people, I'm like, if you're making a roast for Shabbos, just make two and put one in the freezer and then it's ready for Yontif. Or if you're making challah for Shabbos this week, then double the recipe over the next few weeks, every week. And then for Yontif, all of your challahs will be already baked. You see? So like when you can double up, and when you can say, I'm okay with making some salads or whatever on Yom Tov, that's going to be easier. Now, I will just say, I understand the desire to want to have everything done before Yom Tov so that you're not standing in the kitchen. But if that's not possible, that's not possible. And you do the best you can. And that's why it's allowed to cook on Yom Tov. Okay. Right. So that's the first thing. If you're going away, I think it's important to remember that while traveling is very, very stressful, it's a lot less planning than cooking and shopping and meal planning and guests and cleaning up. So take that in for a minute. Once you get to your destination, you know, you're there and that's it, right? So like, obviously you want to be a good guest and you want to be helpful and pitch in and, you know, that kind of thing. But that's, you know, one thing. But whatever you can do leading up to Yom Tov to lighten your load, do it. There's no shame in outsourcing for pay. There's no shame in making your kids, if they're old enough, chip in. There's no shame in not going shopping and ordering everything online. There's no shame in any
buying
of it.
Pre-made food.
Whatever. Yeah. Right. Buying pre-made food. That's a great one. It doesn't matter. It's okay. The point is not how beautifully, you know, I made every single rosette on the plate. Like, I don't need to do that. The food is going to be delicious. Our family is going to be together. We're going to be able to talk to God. That's all we need to do. Like, you don't have to make it bigger than it is. Like, sometimes simple is really, you know, less is more. Simple is the easy way to go, but it also doesn't take away from the experience just because it's simple. There is beauty in simplicity. And so you don't need to kill yourself to, or be on the verge of wanting to kill yourself to have a beautiful Yom Tov and fulfill the mitzvah beautifully. Like, I understand everybody's like, okay, Hidur mitzvah, you know, we want to beautify the mitzvah. But again, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. If you think it's beautiful, if you were doing more than what you could do, it doesn't matter if it's not the same as somebody else. One of the things that really, really bugs me is the keeping up with the Cohens. Like, we don't need to worry about what our neighbors are doing. They do what works for them. We do what works for us. And everybody's happy when you keep your eyes on your own paper, you know, like,
Matovu.
Yashar, right. Like, you don't have to worry about what somebody else is doing.
Yes.
That's not you. That's not your family. Those are not your values. Focus on what is important to you. Figure out how you can simplify that. And that is why, you know, like, repeating menus are worthwhile. Listen, even for Shabbos, I think making a 4-week menu is totally worthwhile because it's enough variety and you don't have to. Personally, we make basically the same thing every week for Shabbos.
Yeah,
you know, we have like a couple of varieties, but, you know, I don't have time to plan elaborate meals every single week. Is it special? Yes. My kids look forward to the Shabbos food all week. Like, they're looking forward to the chicken soup and the challah and the roast. Like, it doesn't matter that we make the same thing every week. If you want to do something special and that's not okay for your family and that's not what you do, or if you love being in the kitchen or if you have time to be in the kitchen, do it. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying, make your expectations reasonable and attainable, because if you're not able to achieve your goals, you're not going to achieve them. And you're going to feel bad about yourself in the meantime, which doesn't help you. It doesn't help your family. It doesn't help your marriage. It doesn't help your relationship with anybody, your friends, your family, yourself. Like, there's no benefit.
Right. I love just thinking about like, oh, that's for when I'm a safta. Like, when I see something, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have so much fun cooking that when I'm a safta and there's nobody
at
home.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it.
You know, and I'm just like, I'll put it on my mental to-do list of like, that's the type of thing I'll have. There'll always be warm muffins. Like, I would love to have all those things, but that's not my life right now. And I've like, when we choose our priorities intentionally, then it makes it so much easier. And I think that sometimes we're stressed and overwhelmed about time. And it's really just, again, following the thought. So much of the time when we're stressed and overwhelmed, what do? Is we go do something that completely wastes time and we have even less time on our hands. But if we just sit down and say like, what is actually on my schedule? What is actually possible for me? Okay. Like, I have 3 hours to prepare for all of our Shoshana, let's say. So what am I going to do? What's going to take me 3 hours? That's it. And we're deciding ahead of time. So we're not in this sort of fantasy land of resisting and hoping things will change. We're just making the decision. And then from that place, we're able to move forward. Where if we're just in this place of like, oh, I'm just always so overwhelmed. I'm always so stressed out. Again, I like the way that you're thinking. And like, I almost feel like everyone could just download your voice into their head of like, okay, well, what can you do? Do we just need to make it simpler? Do we just want to cook on Yontif? Like, let's just get really scientific about it so we can dial down the emotions and just make some decisions. And then we're able to move forward.
There's nothing emotional about this. There's no score. You know, like, I think part of the problem, listen, I always call myself a recovering perfectionist. Like, like, I love it when things go perfectly. Who doesn't? Everybody does. But it's about what is perfect.
Right.
I think a lot of the time is we think what's perfect is what our neighbor is doing rather than what is perfect for us. So when you can sit down and say, like, this is what I'm expecting to happen, like when you can clearly figure out X, Y, and Z, what this day is going to look like, what this day is going to look like, what this day is going to look like, it's so much easier to just be present and to get those things done because it's clear to you what needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, say this, there's a lot of people in my tribe who are ADHD. Mm-hmm. And they're falling down the rabbit hole of going from one thing to the next. That's really, really hard. And that's why for people who have ADHD or other neurodivergent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really, really important to be clear about what needs to get done. This is the key. Here's the key. And this is for everybody. It's not only what needs to get done, but what are the steps to do it? Mm-hmm. So, and this is where I think most organizers get things wrong because it's not just the list of what needs to get done. It's breaking down the task. So when you're making, I don't know, peanut butter and jelly, what are the tasks that need to get done to make the peanut butter and jelly? You need to take the bread out of the refrigerator. You need to take the jelly out of the fridge. You need to take the peanut butter out of the cabinet. You need to get out a knife. You need to get out a plate. For people who are procrastinators, for people who are neurodivergent, right? That's the correct,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
For people who have issues in that realm. And the truth is even for regular people who have big tasks that they don't know how to accomplish, mm-hmm. writing down all the steps helps you. So if you make your to-do list into a recipe, think about like the good recipes. They're like, turn on your oven first, right?
Yes.
And preheat the oven. And you need all of these tools to make this recipe. And like, that's a good recipe. So that's the key, is your to-do list should be like a recipe. So you can have the main task and then you have the subtask bullet pointed underneath it. And that really helps you figure out all the steps. And what I found is that there's a couple of kinds of procrastination, but the main kinds are, I don't know how to do it. I don't have the tools to do it, or I don't, you know, want to do it. It's too emotionally heavy. And I find that the people who have the it's too emotionally heavy are mainly in the, I don't have the tools and I don't know all the things I need to do to get it done. So
that's why it's heavy, you're saying.
Right. They sort of overlap because you don't have the tools or you aren't sure exactly what to do. Mm. Because when you break it down and making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, right, it's only going to take you a couple of minutes to do everything, even include the cleanup. But because you don't understand the scope of the task, and obviously this is a simplified task, but I'm talking about for bigger tasks. I once heard this example, which is a really good example. Somebody wanted bookshelves in their house. And so they've been putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. Well, why were they putting it off? Well, because they didn't know what size to order.
Right.
Well, that's a really easy fix, right? You just get out the measuring tape and you measure them and you go online to IKEA or, you know, wherever, and you order them.
Right.
And then you hire a handyman or you do it yourself, whatever. But the blockage wasn't that she didn't really desperately want the shelves. It was that she didn't take the time to sit down and measure it because she didn't realize that she could or whatever. Right.
So interesting.
So if you can list out the things that need to go with the task, then you can see if this is something you can actually do yourself or if this is something you do need to outsource. Because if a lot of the tasks on your list are house cleaning, let's say, well, when you understand what's involved, you're going to know if you need a professional or if it's a DIY job. So like, if you want to have your carpets cleaned, frankly, that's not something I would ever do myself, even if I could rent a shampooer, right? It's not worth the time that it's going to take me to go to Home Depot, rent a shampooer, figure out how to use it, then do it and return it, right? But it is worth it for me to figure out who's good at their job and hire someone to do it so that I don't have to do it and just be there when they're there.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so yeah. Like when you can figure out the next level, drill down a little bit more in your to-do list, it makes it easier.
That's a great
and
point.
And anything that you need to do, and this is what most people miss when they're trying to get organized. And so if you take away nothing else from today, take away this, like the drill down on your to-do list is going to be key to actually getting things done.
I love it. When we do our execution list for making Shabbos, I tell them when to put in like, okay, step number 10 or something, find a place where you put in, go get a glass of water. And then I say like, and also you need like when you're going to eat, like if you're going to have, you know, a marathon cooking session or something, like put in the breaks as well, because sometimes yeah. we even just like, we'll fly all the way through.
I always tell my clients to build in buffers because, so if you think that a task will take you 30 minutes, I always tell people to buffer an extra 15 because mm-hmm. even if, and like, don't start your next task on your calendar for 15 more minutes, because even if it only takes you 25, you're not in a rush, then you could go to the bathroom or get a drink of water or have something to eat or answer an email or something like that. And then you can start the next task mm-hmm. and you'll still be on schedule, or you could start yes, the next task right. early and just keep going. But like,
right.
but that's really the key. So like one of the other things is when you are cooking, and we sort of touched on this a little bit, but I think it's worth going into a little more detail, is when you're cooking, it's worth it to sit down for a minute and figure out what is the order of operations in cooking. So what makes sense to make first, second, third? Because what do I, like, what's the longest cooking time? So I always use my example of Purim when I make a turkey, okay? So getting the turkey in the oven is premium because it takes a long time to cook, right? So I gotta get that in the oven. And then once that's in the oven, I can start prepping all the next things that need to go in the oven. And then when those last things are going into the oven, then I can do the salads because things are cooking in the oven. So now I have time to start the cleanup, get the salads done, and, you know, work in that way. But when you take a few minutes just to plan it out, it's so much less stressful because you always know the next step. And when a phone call happens or someone breaks something, it's a lot easier to get back on track when you know what the next step is going to be. Like, oh, that's where I left off.
Yeah.
And yeah. that's really what it means to be flexible, is the planning gives us the ability to handle all the dips that come, and it also allows us to be able to prioritize. So let's say it's Erev Yom Tov and you didn't cook everything that you wanted to cook, or you to get into the oven and then you cut yourself glass of shalom mm-hmm. and you can't stop the bleeding, right? Well, all the proteins are made. The only thing you didn't make was the salad. So you can focus on your finger and you can make the salad. And it's going to be okay if you mm-hmm. make them, you know, while everybody's at shul or a little bit later, like that's okay.
You know what to move. Like, you know what exactly. you still need.
You know where you can, right. If there's anything that you want to prep beforehand, like if you want to juice all your lemons in advance, let's say, or like mm-hmm. the messy stuff. A lot of times I tell people like prep the messy stuff early, so that like when you're just chopping vegetables, that's easy, but the dressing, you don't want to squeeze the lemons all over your hand, whatever, like, right. So mm-hmm. that's key. The other thing that's really key in the planning that way is, or is that helpful when you're planning that way, is you can see the duplicate tasks. And what I mean by that is you'll be able to call for duplicate items and deal with them one time. So if three of your recipes call for chopped parsley, you just chop it once at the beginning.
Yeah.
Put, you know, the 2/3 of it to the side for the other recipes, or however much you need for the other recipes. And that part of the recipe is done.
Yep.
The same is true. If you need to juice a lemon for every single salad you're making, juice 5 lemons all at once.
Right.
Like, why would you start and stop? It's easier to just get it all done at one time than it's done. And part of your preparation is, you know, moving forward. And when you get to that step, you're going to be like, well, that was much easier than I thought it was going to be. And that's the part of organization that most people miss out. It's those little cheats, hacks mm-hmm. that make things easier.
Okay. I love it. That's amazing. you got kind of into this territory already with the last question, but the last thing I wanted to ask was, what about people, like, if you were to say to me, it's funny, because I've had other people describe me as organized. I think that's because I used to be an elementary school teacher. So in some ways, like, I need everything visual. I need lists. I need checklists. I need everything, you know. And so people come into my house and they can see, like, oh, wow, that's, you make the same, you know, you have these systems in place. But if you were to ask me if I'm organized, I wouldn't consider myself organized, because there's a messy garage and there's a mess on my desk and things like that. And so sometimes it's like, almost like, you could you lose someone even before we get started if the person has a belief about themselves, but I'm just not an organized person. Like, what would you say to someone who just was like, look?
So I believe that organization is a learned skill. I definitely didn't start out the way I was today. And through trial and error, I've learned lots of tips and tricks. And I definitely talk about that in my book. Like, I didn't know what, no one is born knowing everything. Do you know? Right. Like, we learn, and like, we learn from other people, but we also learn from ourselves, and we see, and this helps us move forward. Let me ask you a question. When you are ready to get your desk tidied up, can you do it? Is there a place to put stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
For the most part.
So then probably your problem is not really that you're not an organized person. It's probably just that you have too much stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is a differentiation that most people don't distinguish. It's not that you're disorganized, because we all have a natural tendency for organization. Some people have a more rounded, more purposeful, you know, sense of it, but like, everybody has it, but it's a more developed, that's the word I was looking for. Some people have more developed or better developed executive function than other people, or organizational skills than other people, but everybody can develop them. And it's important, and especially with children, that we teach them how to develop them. The difference between having good organizational skills, and I don't even really want to call them good organizational skills, we'll say executive functioning, mm-hmm. and being or considering yourself organized, is not actually about the skill level. It's about the amount of stuff you have. So just like you have a certain amount of decisions you're able to make every day, there's a limit to how much stuff you can have before it becomes too much stuff. And, you know, Pirkei Avos says more possessions, more worry, right? So I believe that that's true. We think today, like, the more we have, the better, right? We're in this more is more society, but actually more doesn't really make us better. We look at having less as like, ooh, she's poor, right? Mm-hmm. But no, that's not it. And when you can reframe that in your mind and say like, okay, it's okay if I have less stuff, it's going to help me on my day-to-day level, that's going to be a game changer for you. For you, my bet is that it's the sheer amount of stuff. It's not your level of capability.
Yeah. And you're totally right. Because when we made Aliyah 3 years ago, we didn't make a lift. We only brought what would go in suitcases.
Didn't that feel great?
Oh my gosh. And my house was like never messy. Each of my kids got a little carry-on, and we said, whatever you want to bring that you can fit into this carry-on. And they like, we're fine with it. Like, nothing was their absolute favorite activity, but like, they really like the carry-ons. So that's probably why it was good. and that's what we took. And cleanup was easy, you know, but we've been here for 3 years now, and we don't get rid of as much as we bring in, and you accumulate. This is a very good segue into what are power hours.
Okay.
Because I'm 99% sold already. So if anyone wants to join, you'll see me there.
Okay. So everybody said to me, power hours are dumb. How are they going to work? It's so stupid. How can you help if you're not standing there? Mm-hmm. Because the thing is that most people, again, have the innate understanding of how to be organized. They know it in their core, but they're standing in their disgusting, messy room saying,
yes.
Oh my God, where do
face.
I start?
That's it. Anyone who's listening, if you go to YouTube, you will see the face.
It's like, oh my God, where can I start? Right? Yeah. Like, I don't even know where to begin. Okay, so that's what I can do when we are working together online. When you join a Power Hour, I've already seen your space, so I know exactly what to tell you to start with.
And then I check in. Power Hour is one-on-one, or you're checking with a group of people?
It's a group session.
Yeah.
And the beauty of the group is that everybody is in the same situation as you are. And so there's strength knowing that you are not alone.
Yeah.
That there are all these people all over the world working on improving their lives with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that energy, you can feel it. It's like, it's palpable. You can really, really feel it. It's amazing. And
I totally get that. Like, I finally realized that I started decluttering when my cleaning lady comes. She comes once a week. And I'm like, just knowing that there's someone in my house who's like upstairs doing something there makes it like, I feel like it's, I don't know. There's like an energy.
It's
like,
easier to work when you're with somebody else.
100%. 100%. Right.
The key also is when you do the Power Hours, you will spend less on your cleaning lady.
Yeah.
I know that sounds crazy, but I would say the biggest complaint I hear about cleaners is not that they're not good. It's that they don't get the list finished. And that's because they're putting away all your junk.
Yeah.
And they're not putting it in the right place because they don't know where it goes because you haven't set an actual place for it. So what you're going to do is you're going to make your cleaner's job so much easier, but you're also going to make your life better because they're going to be more productive and efficient as well. So the key to Power Hours is that I am there holding you accountable. Now, I have people who don't declutter on the Power Hours. They come with their work and they just want me to check in on them every 15 minutes. They send me a list of all the tasks they're going to do. I recommend which task I think they should do first based on the timing, and they get their task list done.
Wow. Well, and this is also amazing for people with, I see why you work with a lot of people.
Oh,
with
ADHD, it's because totally amazing for you.
Proven things for people with ADHD is just having, you know, a buddy who's next to you doing the same thing.
Right.
Would you like, can kids go on Power? Like, what if a kid?
Oh, kids come on all the time.
Really?
The thing about kids though, is that it depends on their age.
Yeah.
So all I would say 50% of my members have smaller kids and almost all of them have been on with them at some point or another.
Mm-hmm.
Kids have a limit though. Most kids, especially the under 10 crowd, can't do more than 30 minutes. So if you do want to come on with a kid, and if you're ever doing an organizational task with your child, which you should always help your child organize. I mean, I have three teenagers, they're going to be 14 at the end of this month. And I have an almost 16-year-old and I still help them declutter because at the end of every season, we go through their clothes and we figure out what they need. They still need me for that. But now they're at the point where they can do their regular cleanup by themselves because now they know how to do it because we've created systems. But at the beginning, you're going to have to keep doing it with them, even older kids, because they're not trained. They need training.
Just like we need
But certainly, exactly. Certainly a child who is over 12, you know, the 12 to 17 sort of crowd could definitely come on for an hour by themselves, you know, with simultaneously. So I have a mom working in one room and a kid working in another room and that's fine. Mm-hmm. And, but like so many moms tell me, they're like, my kids know when I'm doing Power Hours and they're so happy. And the shift in the house is really enormous. But what a lot of my members tell me is they like the model because they're learning how to do it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm there and I'm guiding you and I'm walking you through this difficult time period for you and I'm keeping you on track. But what they tell me is like, it's so much easier for them now that they've been with me for a couple of months because they're like, now they understand the order of operations.
100%. And it also becomes the way you think, right?
Exactly.
It's exactly I'm the same way with coaching. Like I don't want to just come on and ask you great questions and then now you have an aha moment, but the next time you have a problem, you need to come back to me and I'll ask you questions. I want to teach you how do you operate your brain. So the next time you have a challenge, you're like, hey, maybe I can actually use that tool that I learned. So it's 100%. It's the internal clutter and the external clutter. We make a great team, you and me.
Yes, I think so. We should definitely team up. But I think that also what people don't realize is that a lot of people are like, well, I should know how to do this myself. But if you never learned, why would you know that?
Yep.
And I think people are very, very hard on themselves. So like, if you needed help at the gym, like just because you're 40, does that mean that you know how to use every piece of gym equipment? No, you get a trainer mm-hmm. and they show you mm-hmm. how to maximize right. for your body, all the equipment, right? The same thing with nutrition. Okay. Yes. We should know how to eat when you're 35 or 40 or 50 even, but maybe you don't, maybe you didn't have a good teacher. Sometimes our parents are doing the best they can. It's not, they're doing the best they can and we're forgiving them for that. Right. But like it didn't get us where we needed to go.
Yeah.
Right. So we need to take matters into our own hands and we need to get the help that we need from wherever we need it, whatever the problem is 100%. For. So just because, you know, you need help, you shouldn't feel bad. Don't feel bad. Mm-hmm. Also, the way that we live today is not the same way that people lived 100 years ago. We have probably 100 times more stuff than people had even 25 years ago. We have more stuff and we keep stuff for longer. There's a limit to how much you can have. And once you pass that limit, you don't know how to deal with it anymore. So yeah. You have to get help and you can't feel bad about getting the help that you need for whatever situation it is that you need help with.
Yeah. And I think it's a tremendous act of like self-love to support yourself that way, right? To just say like,
and to admit that you need the help.
Yeah. Yeah. Just get it. I'm like, no problem. Yeah. Like we would do it for our kids in a heartbeat. Those of us who have kids, right? You wouldn't be like, well, just get your sensory stuff under control. Like, no,
right.
Like, oh, they need a little support in this area. That's not a problem with them. I'm not right. blaming them. Let's just get the support so they can like live their best life. That's what we want.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And the thing is when you can get all the excess out of your life, if you can make the commitment right now to decluttering and organizing yourself, in the long run, you will have more time, more energy. And I don't know how to say this in a way that makes sense, but like more love. You'll care for yourself more. Your family will care for you more. Everybody will take care of the space a lot better because you'll show that you respect it, because you showed like you took the time to respect it. And like the level of bayit hamikdash increases in the house significantly. And it's a huge shift emotionally and spiritually for a family when you start to take control of the clutter and make a change.
It's very powerful work. It's very powerful work you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah. What about the book? Can you just take for a minute?
Oh, like, okay.
A very cool thing. This book that
this is my book.
It's called Organized Jewish Life. Listening.
Yeah. And it actually has a companion planner to get ready for Shabbos and Yom Tov. I wrote this book because when my mom died, we all knew she was going to die. And I prepared myself. I read how to be a mourner in Judaism, because obviously it's something I've seen in a big way, but not in a close-up way, right? So I read about how to do it. And then when my sister called me, it was in the middle of Corona and I was in Israel and they were in the US, and I didn't know how to translate what I had learned into practical application. And I said to myself after I was done sitting Shiva, I can't be the only one who can't figure out how to apply the halacha in a practical way. And it happened to me in a sense where I was sitting Shiva, but it could happen in any Jewish life cycle event, and it could happen before any chag, and it could happen in a lot of just day-to-day things that need to get done in Jewish life, right? So I'm like, I don't ever want anybody to feel that way. And the truth is that if I would have just handed my husband a list, he would have gladly done whatever I needed, but he had even less experience with death than I did. And he didn't really know what to do. And we both sort of felt like we were in the dark. So when I sat down, I wanted a way to honor my mom. And I thought like, okay, I can go to shul every day and say Kaddish. And I started doing that. And I'm like, this is not for me. There's a reason why this is my brother's job and not mine, right? And then I said to myself, like, okay, well, I can learn something every day. But the truth is I already had a couple of learning projects that I was doing daily. And I'm like, I don't think I have the bandwidth to learn anything else right now. And you know, you're consumed by the grief, right? So I'm like, okay, how can I honor my mom? So first I'm like, okay, well, I will write a checklist on how to, you know, get ready for morning. I'm like, well, who's going to want that? So then I increase the scope a little bit and I'm like, okay, well, I will write it about how to get ready for all the Jewish life cycle events, because people ask me that all the time. Right. And then I'm like, well, can't do Jewish life cycle events without also doing Jewish holidays. And then as I was writing, I was like, well, so many people are like, well, how do I set up my, I'm a Kala. How do I set up my home? Or how do I decide if this is a good, you know, place to rent? Or a lot of people are just like, what are the things that I need when I'm moving? Right. So, so the third section in the book is called adulting, and it's just how to manage in day-to-day life in an organized way. And some of it is related to Judaism and some of it is not, but for the most part,
we're kind of just getting access to your brain and all the stuff that you figured out. Like having a like really helpful older sister.
Yes, exactly.
Like, here's how we're going to get you ready for your move. I love that.
Yes. Yes, exactly what it's like.
Amazing. Any other parts of the book that you want to?
You know, I want to just say that another reason in the scope of the book, okay, so when I was in high school, I took this class called The Jewish Life Cycle, and that was sort of the inspiration for this book. And part of the thing that I realized was I was very fortunate, and I had this great class in high school, and I had a great teacher, Mrs. Jacoby, but a lot of people don't have this class. And even like I went to a Beis Yaakov type school, and it wasn't actually Beis Yaakov, but similar. And even at Beis Yaakov, this is a very, very rare kind of class. And what I realized was that not a lot of people have this, and so they don't really understand the joy that goes into a lot of these things. But Ms. Jacoby read an early draft and she's like, wow, I see some blockages behind the mikvah.
Oh, interesting.
And so I'm like, okay. So I really, she's like, it would be great if you could approach this section with a little more joy. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to figure out a way to make this mitzvah better for me. And Hashem has his own way of working, right? The next day I see an ad on Facebook, join the mikvah attendance course from the Eden Center.
Wow.
And so in order to learn more about the mikvah, I became a balanit, what we call balanit in Israel, mikvah attendant. And I love the class so much that I also became a kala teacher.
Wow.
From the Eden Center. And what it did was it reshaped my perspective on mitzvot relating to
marriage.
Tarat mishpacha, right? Marriage. So there is a section about the mikvah and how to prepare yourself for the mikvah in the book. But I also talk about the emotional aspects of how you can prepare yourself within an engagement and early stages or even late stages of your marriage. And there are sections in there about how to prepare yourself for pregnancy. And there are sections in there on how to prepare yourself if chas v'shalom your pregnancy doesn't go full term. Because what I found is that there is a very big lacking about talking about these kinds of things within the Jewish community. And we do a disservice to ourselves and our daughters and our sisters and our nieces and cousins and everybody who we love when we don't create a space where women can talk about these things. And so I hope that within the book, I've given you a space to understand that it's okay to reach out and talk about when things don't go exactly as you planned, regardless of what the scenario is, but specifically how to prepare for those things, because we're not talking about them as a culture.
Right.
What do you do if you chas v'shalom are having a miscarriage or you have a stillborn?
Yep.
What do you do in those situations? How can you emotionally prepare yourself? Obviously, no one ever wants that to happen. No one wants to get divorced, right? Well, maybe some people want to, but like, you know, even if you want to get divorced, how can you do that so you can still walk away with your dignity intact? Mm-hmm. And getting those things done is like, you don't have to follow the list to the T, but if I can just, you know, stimulate like one thing in your mind, like, oh, I should do that. I should, you know, get as much money as I can saved up before I walk out. Right. Like whatever, there's a lot of things in here. Take what you want and leave what you don't want. But even if it helps you do one thing a little bit better, then it was worth it. Yeah. And it's all Lule and Nishimo for my mother. And like, wow. it's to her great benefit that I did this. My mother was an excellent, excellent hostess. And I took everything that I learned from her, the good and the bad. And I gave you everything that I know myself, mm-hmm. and I put it all in one place.
Amazing. And it's so great to just have that on, like you said, no one wants to get into these crisis situations, but just right. having it somewhere in your house, because once we're in that crisis, we are not ready to sit down and make our best list in that moment, right? Like,
exactly.
We're busy dealing with the emotions and the crisis. And so
how, but you don't know how to research it.
Yeah. Right. And you don't know. And especially something like a miscarriage, you know, you don't even know who to, you don't, do you want to just start asking around to find out who's had a miscarriage and at what term? Right. And it's great. Amazing. Amazing. And it's, again, like, it Thank really you. Just feels like, it's like having that really wise older sister, just like, here's what we need to do. Here's what's going to happen. And also as a Baal Teshuva, I can imagine that this would be extremely valuable. Although it's interesting that you're saying very much so for FFEs too, you know, like however you got here.
You know, I was talking to my best friend who's also an FFB, and we were talking about Erev Tefillin, and I was like, I think in my whole life, I only saw my mom do it once. And when she was doing it, I was like, what? Because it's not something you do every Yom Tov. Or like, I remember standing at the Shabbos, at the Yom Tov candles with my mother and be like, okay, Shechiyata tonight? Yes, no, maybe. Right. Like, so there's charts in the book, like, when you say Shechianu, when you need a Yahrzeit candle, when you make the Erev Tefillin, there's the brachot in transliteration. So for those people who are just starting out, because my aunt who didn't grow up religious said to me, she's like, listen, I can read the brachot now, but when I started out and I joined your family 60 years ago, I couldn't read Hebrew. And the thing was I didn't know where to look to find those brachot. So if you're just starting out, this book is great. If you're Amazing. An FFB, it's also great. Like, there's something in there for everybody. And it really, really helps you. The thing is the reason why it's so good is because we don't know what we don't know. And even though I can't go through every single scenario of something that might happen, it can make you ask better questions when you're dealing with the professional at that time, the doctor, the rabbi, the lawyer, whoever you have to deal with. When you sort of know a little bit more about the situation, it's easier to get the answers from those professionals that you need, because it gives you a little bit of background.
Yes. Yes. Amazing. Okay. I could go all day. But
I love talking to you. You're so fun.
Then let's talk about the giveaway. Okay. So at kayla11.com/balagan, and that'll be linked in the show notes in case you're not sure how to spell that, but it's very phonetic. Then we will have a place where you can just put in your name and email. You will, first of all, get added to both of our lists so that you can find out what we're up to, opportunities to work with us. But super fun, we have a giveaway. So each of us are pitching something in. Rebecca, why don't you share what you are including in the giveaway?
Okay, so for the giveaway, we'll be including one copy of Organized Jewish Life, one copy of the Organized Jewish Life Planner, and a 1-month membership to the silver level membership. But anybody who subscribes to the or enters the giveaway will also get a coupon in case they don't win.
Oh, very nice.
For the membership.
Oh, should I do a coupon too? Let's do it. Okay, great. You're making me up the ante here. All right. And are these different? Those are three different prizes? Not like one person gets super spoiled, or yes?
However you want to do it.
How should we do it? I think we should let three different people win.
Okay.
Okay, great. They get to hear the process here while they're listening to the podcast.
Okay.
I'm cool with that. It's a little behind.
You can do it however you like.
All right. And should we vote? I will be including 3-month memberships inside of the How to Glow community.
Okay, awesome.
And now that Rebecca just upped the ante, we will also include a coupon for the first month of the How to Glow membership. So,
okay.
So worth awesome. Joining. I don't normally do these, but you're like, Kayla, we got to do it. You're right. That's just way more fun. Why not give out?
Well, I mean, like giveaway is awesome. Like,
you get a car, you get a car.
Yes. Yes, you and you. Totally.
Perfect.
Totally.
All right. So I will also make sure to be linking your website, any of your, are you like, are there special, like, best places to find you that you want people to hear about? And
okay,
and
so I'm on Instagram, but I really would love it if you found me on TikTok, because I love TikTok. I have a Facebook group called
Is it a handle? What's TikTok? You gotta help. I mean, I know what it is,
yeah,
but like, how,
it's at handle? Rebecca Saltzman. Yeah, it's okay, at great. A handle at Rebecca Saltzman. So it's Rebecca Saltzman. And we are also, oh, right. We have a Facebook group. It's called Organizing in Israel. You don't have to live in Israel to join. It doesn't even necessarily help if you live in Israel. I mean, some of the questions mm-hmm. are centered around Israel, but they're mostly, you know, towards, you know, being Jewish and religious in okay. general. So it's a really great outgoing group, and you will totally get lots of support there.
Amazing. Okay. Thank you so much for coming on. I feel like I would love
Thanks
to have
so
you back another
me.
Time. And
okay, and, let's do it.
But let's tackle the next holiday. All right. Be well.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Hey there. If you know a newlywed or you are one, we have a wedding gift for you. Go to kayla11.com/newlywed to get access to my best-selling course, First Year Married. You have got to be in your first 6 months, so make sure you don't wait. And if you've been married longer than that, but you're looking for some more support, or this stuff is just super fun for you, I'd love to have you join me inside of my membership community, How to Glow. It's for women looking for a fresh take on relationship development. Join us for live coaching calls, signature classes, and anonymous Q&A. Let's do it.